welcome to tonight's program. Thought for a minute there we didn't have any sound. I guess we didn't. Okay, well, what do we got tonight? This is Wednesday night. That means it's sort of church night. There's a couple of things. A Supreme Court ruling today that, once again, tries to correct the terrible discrimination that is practiced in this country against religious organizations. And this time the Supreme Court ruled unanimously. We'll get to that. From Manchester, New Hampshire, in a rousing victory speech last night, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney vowed to undo everything Barack Obama has done as president, promising his supporters, quote, "I will make Osama bin Laden alive again," end quote. Romney called the assassination of bin Laden, quote, "just one of the many mistakes this president has made." He added, "say what you will about Osama bin Laden, the man was a job creator," end quote. The presumptive Republican nominee said that on his first day in office, quote, "I will get a hold of the DNA of Osama bin Laden, breathe the life force of capitalism back into it," end quote. The reanimation of the slain al-Qaeda leader is just the first of many steps Mr. Romney plans to take in his effort to get the USA, quote, "back to exactly how it was," end quote, before Mr. Obama took office. He went on to say, quote, "as president, I will immediately close down GM and Chrysler and put thousands of Americans back out on the street, and then I will try to get hold of the DNA of Gaddafi," end quote. At another point in his victory speech, Romney complained that his controversial remark about liking to fire people had been taken out of context. He said, the full quote was, "I like to fire people and then laugh at them." You can get all this from the Borowitz Report. Andy Borowitz, theborowitzreport.com. If you want to. Hey, some good news. Do you want to hear some good news? Something that is not vicious, ugly, mean, hateful, cynical, ironic. Wait a minute, that's my entire program. No, for real, this has got to be good news. There is a conference in Austin, Texas going on right now. And three studies were released at this conference. It's the journal Nature and the American Astronomical Society's conference in Austin, Texas. And there were some reports issued at this conference that show astronomers believe now that planets easily outnumber stars in our galaxy. And they're finding them all over the place, especially now with the Kepler telescope up. And according to these reports, they've just begun to count. These studies released today demonstrate what is being referred to as an extrasolar real estate boom. Yeah, somebody would have to put it that way, right? One study shows that in our Milky Way, most stars have planets. And since there are a lot of stars in our galaxy, about 100 billion of them, you know, that means a lot of planets. Harvard University astronomer Lisa Kaltenegger said, quote, "we're finding an exciting potpourri of things we didn't even think could exist." And that includes planets that mirror Luke Skywalker's home planet. Remember that one with twin suns? Ms. Kaltenegger said, quote, "we're awash in planets, where 17 years ago we weren't even sure there were planets. Confirmed planets outside our solar system, which are called exoplanets, because we have this concept that we are in the center of something." Center of something. Well, no, not really. They're exoplanets. They now number well over 700. And the ones still to be confirmed are in the thousands. Now, you know what this means. I'm sure you do. NASA's new Kepler planet hunting telescope in space is discovering these exoplanets that are in zones friendly to life and detecting planets the size of Earth. This is moving the field of looking for some kind of life outside Earth from science fiction to just plain science. it. I hope that I'm still alive, and I hope you are too, True Seeker. When life is discovered on these planets, in some way, I don't know how it would be discovered. I'm not talking about bacteria. I'm not talking about little fossils laying around in the frozen rock formations on some planet. No. I'm talking about sentient life. That would be fun to, I think, unless they're very hungry and we are very meaty to them. I think it would be, a great experience. I honestly believe one of the first things it would do would be completely shatter, for once and for all, the religions on this planet. Well, not all of them, but I think the people of the book would find that all of a sudden their belief system was dust, this complete dust. I don't know how would Christians, Jews, and Muslims react to that? That would be a hell of a shock, wouldn't it? Because according to their holy text, you know, it's here. Life is here. That's it. Oh my God! But it would be great fun to be around when life is discovered. You think? I do. Under the heading, "You can run, but you can't hide." Did you hear about this? George Bush has canceled a visit to Switzerland. He was supposed to go there February 12th to Geneva. He was due to be the keynote speaker at a Jewish charity gala. But he's canceled the trip because pressure has been building on the Swiss government to arrest him and open a criminal investigation if he enters that country. Criminal complaints against Bush regarding his smarmy, self-satisfied attitude on torture and the fact that he ordered torture have been lodged in Geneva, Switzerland, according to court officials there. Human rights groups said they had intended to submit a 2,500-page case against him in the Swiss city tomorrow, in Geneva tomorrow, for alleged mistreatment of militants at Guantanamo Bay. Other groups have called for a protest on the day of his visit if he shows up, which he won't. The New York-based Human Rights Watch and International Federation of Human Rights said the cancellation of his trip was linked to growing moves to hold him accountable for the use of torture, including partial drowning, or what is referred to in this country laughingly as waterboarding. Hi, we're going to waterboard. What is that? Oh, they dribble a little water in your mouth. Really? Yeah, you know. Like, what did our great cultural leader say? Rush Limbaugh, kind of like, you know, hazing in college. Or was that about the tortured Abu Ghraib? It's hard to keep Limbaugh's madness in order. Bush, of course, has admitted in both his memoirs and in TV interviews that he ordered the simulated or partial drowning, which is identified as torture by civilized countries. The action in Switzerland showed that Mr. Bush had reason to fear complaints against him if he travels to countries that have ratified an international treaty banning torture. And you know what? That gets to a lot of countries, doesn't it, George? Huh? I think, let's see, Switzerland and the U.S. are among 147 countries that have ratified that 1987 treaty. Well, why don't we arrest him here? We'll be right back.
Oh,
21 past the hour. One of the darker chapters in this country's history, something that I don't think the little kiddies that go to schools learn about, is the eugenics program that was popular in this country from 1929. It wasn't popular all the way up to 1974, but it was in effect from 1929 to 1974. Some people have suggested that Hitler's master race ideas were based on the U.S. eugenics ideas. There were several states that had an active eugenics program. One of those states was North Carolina. And there was a meeting, I think it occurred here in Atlanta, that has been trying to determine how much money should be paid to the victims of a North Carolina sterilization program. And remember, eugenics, the whole idea was intended to reduce welfare costs and cleanse the gene pool of undesirable characteristics. So the task force assigned to figure out a dollar value has decided that every living person sterilized as part of North Carolina's formal eugenics program should receive $50,000. Now, North Carolina was one of, I think, nearly three dozen states, if you can believe this. Three dozen states that once had eugenics programs. And the other states, some of the other states sterilized more people. In California, for example, about 20,000 people were sterilized by the state. In North Carolina, they're guessing around 7,000 people. But North Carolina's lasted the longest and was one of the most aggressive. A woman who grew up in a poor family of 16, her name is Rita. She was sterilized at 21 during a cesarean section to deliver her second child. And she said today, she's now 72, she said, "I think that number, $50,000, sounds fantastic. That is surely going to help a lot. Lord, I wouldn't know how to act if I get to buy me some new clothes." That's what Rita Thompson Swords had to say. That every victim was pleased. Another woman, Elaine Riddick, now 58, who lives in Atlanta, was sterilized after a rape left her pregnant at 13. She got raped, she got pregnant, she got sterilized. She said, quote, "They took away something from me that was so valuable that I can never get back." Dr. Laura Gerald, the head of the task force, said the money sent a message to her fellow North Carolinians that North Carolina, quote, does not tolerate bureaucracies that trample on basic human rights, end quote. Really? So you mean that gay marriage is legal in North Carolina? Not the last time I checked. So what does she mean? What does Dr. Laura Gerald, or Gerald, I guess it's Gerald, mean when she says North Carolinians, quote, do not tolerate bureaucracies that trample on basic human rights, end quote? The right of free association, the right to form a contract, is that not a basic human right, the right of free association? You know, hang out with, get married to, whomever you happen to love, isn't that? Yeah? So, while they're working on the problem of compensating people for the horror of forced, unwitting sterilization, most of the people never knew that they were being sterilized. And they were mostly women, of course. But in working to compensate the victims of that plan, apparently Dr. Laura Gerald inadvertently makes a statement that is patently untrue. That North Carolinians do not tolerate bureaucracies that trample on basic human rights. You've got one right in Raleigh, Dr. Gerald. It's called your state legislature. They trample on human rights every single day that the restrictions against gay marriage are now lifted. But that's a different thing, right? Gay people, well, you know, that's different. just like back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and early 70s, people who needed to be sterilized were different too, right? I sometimes wonder if people just are incapable of hearing the irony in their own statements, especially bureaucrats. I don't know from Adam's house cat about Dr. Laura Gerald, the head of the task force that's trying to compensate North Carolinians still living, who were forcibly, unwittingly sterilized, unwitting on their part, the victims. They didn't know they were being sterilized. Nobody asked them. And while they're setting a dollar fee, this doctor says, well, here in North Carolina, we don't tolerate bureaucracies that trample on basic human rights. Give me a goddamn break, will you?
Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Sterilization, eugenics. Anyway, to close out that cheerful little story, in addition to compensation, this task force for victims of forced sterilization in North Carolina recommends continued financing of the Justice for Sterilization Victims Foundation, which is helping to locate the victims. We had some fine old programs back then, didn't we, huh? Eugenics. Get rid of those Caucasians that look funny or smell funny or talk funny or keep having youngins. And this was not just a Southern operation. This is all over the country. And out of this, one of the ideas for Hitler's master race idea came from U.S. eugenics. How about Mississippi Governor, well, no longer, Haley Barbour, on his last day in office, He gave pardons to nearly 200 people in prison, including more than two dozen whose crimes were listed as murder or homicide. Now, this is not based on evidence that proved they were innocent, although when you think about Mississippi, probably like Alabama and Texas, a lot of people who are in the prisons, well, all over the country, really, are there on false evidence, usually eyewitness testimony that is just hog's not, means nothing. So a lot of innocent people are in prison. That used to be a joke. Hey, everybody in prison's innocent. No, not everybody, but a damn big minority of people in prison are there, and they are innocent, right? Anyway, Haley Barbour just decided for the hell of it to release people who had worked at the governor's mansion in Jackson, Mississippi. State records released yesterday show that some of the convicted killers were pardoned. And, you know, pardon, that means you never did anything. Some of the people, the survivors of some of the victims of the killers, were highly pissed off. And the Mississippi State Attorney General has decided to open an investigation and see if this can be overturned. Because the Attorney General of Mississippi says that Haley Barbour's actions were unconstitutional where it concerns the Constitution of the state of Mississippi. Now, the reason this gets my attention, you just don't expect this from a chump like Haley Barbour, who is part of that white, southern, conservative citizens coalition. That's the CCC, was the offspring of the KKK. The same thing. And you don't expect that from, you know, some tobacco-chewing lard-ass like Haley Barbour, that he is going to even consider the idea of justice, if that's what this was. It may not have been. Haley Barbour has always been tough on crime. You know, yeah, tough on crime. Like all Republicans. Yeah, I'm tough on crime. Yeah, how's that? Jaywalking? 50 years, goddammit. Or wait a minute, was it a black guy? Yeah. Okay, 75 years. Inmates on death row, of course, have not benefited from Mr. Barbour's clemency power. In fact, during his term in office, nine men were executed. He spared nobody on death row, but he had no problem commuting the sentences of people convicted of murder. Which is not to say that it was a bad thing. I'm not saying that. That's not the reason I'm bringing it up. It might have been a good thing. But if it was a good thing, I'm sure that part was lost on Haley Barbour. He is a white, conservative, southern male who was in a position of enormous power. He also was a lying son of a bitch when he headed the Republican National Committee. He was taking money under the table from the Chinese in order to influence elections in this country. And just about the time when that was supposed to be investigated, remember what happened? The Al Gore Buddhist Temple story? Remember the Al Gore Buddhist Temple story? No, nobody remembers that. Oh, man, did they make a big deal about that. Al Gore went to a fundraiser at a Buddhist temple, and I don't know, somewhere in the United States, and money was collected, and some of the money was traced back to, oh, my God, a Chinese businessman or something like that, which proved that Al Gore was a communist, a Chi-Com sympathizer. But of course, Haley Barbour, the big scandal, that got buried real quick, didn't it? Boom, be-doop, boom. Prairie 2. If Bain Capital was a ship, Gordon Gekko would be her captain. Eye patch, wooden leg, and parrot. Bain Capital, of course, is Romney's. Prairie 2 writes, oil refiners have stopped buying oil from Iran. This was the headline today. Well, really just on the spot market. Two-thirds of the Iranian oil that refiners buy is on long-term contract. And they won't give that up unless forced to by an EU embargo. China continues to buy oil and doesn't accept anybody else's opinion on the matter. They've been buying less Iranian oil lately, but this is reportedly because of a pricing dispute. Since two-thirds of Iran's oil goes to the Far East, it sounds like Iran's only problem is getting full price. The price is going up thanks to the U.S. pressure on countries to not buy from Iran, so Iran could end up getting just as much for their oil as now, or more. See how this stuff backfires. Iran's biggest problem is really the threats made by the United States against any foreign bank who does business with Iran's banks. The banks who do would be prohibited from doing business in the U.S., and this could make it hard for Iran to get paid for its oil. This could, in theory, include those huge Chinese banks in Lower Manhattan. Obama might as well threaten the king of the moon. China will pay as much attention. Just the same, the corporate media is squawking about $5 gas by summer because of the shortage of oil that the Iran embargo might cause. They don't mention that the U.S.'s biggest export is now fuel in the form of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. The biggest U.S. export. The U.S. gets less than 15% of its oil from the Middle East and none from Iran. If we would bring the U.S. Navy home, that percentage would be even less. Gold is falling again as investors are looking for cash, mostly U.S. dollars. Gold has lost $400 an ounce since its peak last summer. Hey, you Glenn Beck freaks. At the time, I was getting all kinds of smart-ass blog comments because I was saying gold wasn't a good investment. It's still not. The company that makes Twinkies is in Chapter 11 bankruptcy again after only 2 years. They're seeking to gut their union contracts. Of course. The reasons cited in most of the corporate news reports are high sugar and flour prices, even though these are down currently. Less reported is the fact that they carry massive debts that can no longer they can no longer service despite interest rates trending near zero. Why, you might ask? Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't bother to research it. Rather, I'll make a shrewd bet. I'll bet the 90-year-old company, who makes an extremely popular product that has literally an indefinite shelf life, is in trouble because it has been looted by corporate raiders. That's why. Over the past 30 years, companies like this have been routinely looted by either their management, that simply takes not only all the profits, but all the assets of the company in the form of executive compensation. They're able to do this because the top tier of management is paid, not whether the company can afford it or what is required to find competent management, but what a compensation board selected by management decides other companies are paying, no matter how ridiculous this amount might be. However, the more likely scenario for the downfall of a mature company that has a lot of assets but doesn't pay much for dividends is that the stock can be had cheap. A company like Bain Capital will raise money, typically from foreign sources, taking advantage of the exchange rate, raise capital to buy the controlling interest in the target company. This doesn't need to be the 51%, just more than any other invested party or interested party, like, say, the founders control. Once in control, the looters will replace the top management or bribe them to go along with what amounts to grand theft. The valuable assets of the company are spun off in separate divisions or simply sold outright to China, and these so-called profits captured by the new controlling interests. Once bled dry, the base company is then abandoned, still holding all the debt, including the debt used to buy the company in the first place. This debt is then what they call corporate junk bonds. And there are trillions of U.S. dollars of this garbage coming due in 2012. Maybe the Mayan accountants foresaw this apocalypse. Mitt Romney characterizes his activity at Bain as finding troubled companies and restructuring them the same way a pirate ship restructures a fat merchantman into booty. They weren't interested in troubled companies. They were interested in healthy companies they could loot. The current depression is largely the result of 30 years of theft like this come home to roost. These practices were decriminalized by Reagan, so it's difficult to bring charges against the guilty. In fact, they are normally seen as the captains of industry or the masters of the universe. Really, they are Gordon Gekko of the 80s movie Wall Street, played by Michael Douglas, who famously intoned, "Greed is good!" Today, any sort of justice seems as made up as a pirate movie. Of course, it's up to us to change that. PrairieNumeral2.com.
Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
All right. Time for a correction. The story that I mentioned, the first part of the program about Bush canceling a visit to Switzerland over fears he could be arrested on torture charges, that story is a year old. What? That story is a year old. Speak up! That story is a year old. It's from February. He was going to speak February 12th, 2011. We have to do something about our research department, Kathy. I want several people in there fired. All right? And we'll bring in, we'll hire some new people. Research department, my ass. All right. Thanks to our the person who watches over the factual truthiness of what we talk about in this program. Thanks, Reg. So, yeah, it was a year ago. How did I do that? How did I let that story? Oh, well. The fact that he had to cancel the program, or he had to cancel the trip a year ago, is just as relevant to me as if he had to cancel it next month. But anyway, it's what you find in the newspapers, corrections from yesterday's newspaper. Well, at least in this program, we give it to you. Corrections from 45 minutes ago. All righty then. What other current up-to-the-date stuff do we have here, Kathy? Mitt Romney is telling the 99% to stop being jealous and shut up. This is at Think Progress. Today, says right here, January 11th, 2012, Romney keeps saying we shouldn't be critical of Wall Street or our broken economy in public. Think Progress reports, as we said earlier this week, Mitt Romney's record of Bain Capital is one of a rapacious corporate raider who amassed a $250 million fortune by bankrupting companies and laying off thousands of hardworking Americans. What's more, Romney takes advantage of unfair tax loopholes to pay a lower tax rate on his millions of dollars in ongoing annual profits from Bain than tens of millions of middle-class Americans pay on the wages they earn. Well, he was interviewed by Matt Lauer yesterday. Romney is coming under criticism for his record at Bain, and most of the criticism is coming from other Republicans, which is just an absolute joke. Anyway, this morning, Romney responded by calling such criticism un-American class warfare that is simply motivated by envy. He said people shouldn't be discussing this in public. Discussions of income equality were only fit for what he calls quiet rooms, end quote, quiet room. Isn't that where they put somebody who's in a mental health facility when they go a little bit berserko? Isn't that called a quiet room? When I was there, that's what it was called. No. When I was there, it's called a seclusion room. That's right. Anyway, there's a video from Lau. Lauer said, when you said that we already have a leader who divides us with the bitter politics of envy, I'm curious about the word envy. Do you suggest that anyone who questions the policies and practices of Wall Street and financial institutions, anyone who has questions about the distribution of wealth and power in this country, is envious? Is it only about jealousy or is it about fairness? Romney. You know, I think it's about envy. I think it's about class warfare. When you have a president encouraging the idea of dividing America based on the 99% versus 1%, and those people who have been most successful will be in the 1%, well, you've opened up a whole new wave of approach in this country, which is entirely inconsistent with the concept of one nation under God. What? What? The American people, I believe, in the final analysis will reject it. Matt Lauer. Yeah, but envy? Are there no fair questions about the distribution of wealth without it being seen as envy? Romney. I think it's fine to talk about those things in quiet rooms and discussions about tax policy and the like, but the president has made it part of his campaign rally. Everywhere he goes, we hear him talking about millionaires and billionaires and executives and Wall Street. It's a very envy-oriented, attack-oriented approach, and I think it'll fail. You want to summarize it in one sentence. Wanting an economy that works for everyone, not just the wealthy few, isn't un-American class warfare driven by envy. It's a core American value. But you see, to Mitt Romney, I mean, I don't understand this guy. This is like somebody who is either come off his medications or got on them. I think he's been doing a lot of black acid. I'm serious. I think this guy trips. I really do. And there's no problem with that. But for Christ's sake, Matt, put a sign around your neck that says, hi, I just did 900 mics of some really good acid that came from a lab in Russia. Can you do that instead of the stuff that you talk about, these lies you make up? He has done a complete 180. I don't give a rat's ass about Mitt Romney. The voters in South Carolina are going to carve him a new body orifice. They don't like Mitt Romney in South Carolina. Even though, well, they don't like the governor there, Nikki Haley, either. Even though she's endorsed him. Maybe we get a 1-2 punch out of South Carolina. Romney goes down and takes Haley with him. Who knows? No, I think Romney, you can tell by looking at Romney and his four sons. I'm not intending this as an offensive statement. But you've seen those pictures of Romney and his four boys. And, you know, you can dress them up very quickly and scare the hell out of yourself. But you don't have to. Just look at them. They all grin the same way. If that family's not on hardcore LSD, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a balance to that statement. They just all look like they're doing acid. They really do. Even when Romney is eviscerating his opponents, he's got that dung-eating grin. Hi, I'm just tripping my brains out here, but this is such fun. I don't know, man. Wow, look at the rainbows. Woo! Things I want to talk to you about, but just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, there is a bill that has been introduced in the House and the Senate. In the Senate, it's been introduced by Joe Lieberman. In the House, it's been introduced by Charles Dent, a Republican from Pennsylvania. And the bill would give the U.S. government the power to strip Americans of their citizenship without being convicted of being hostile against the United States. In other words, you can be stripped of your nationality for what is called engaging in or purposefully and materially supporting hostilities against the United States. Now, legally, the term hostilities means any conflict subject to the laws of war. But you got to consider that we are now in the war on terror, and the laws regarding that are a little ambiguous, to say the least. You're not going to believe this. If you want to look this up over the next hour and be prepared for this horror story, the House bill is H.R. 3166, and the Senate bill is S.1698. It's known as the Enemy Expatriation Act, H.R. 3166 and S.1698. Shudder. Phone lines are open, 877-996-2556. If you want to call in while you're deciding whether or not you want to. I got another email from Joe in Temecula, California. I want you to hear this. This is a very interesting take. Joe writes, "Hi, Mike. The things you've been discussing over the past few days on fascism and Bob Alexander's piece got me thinking again. I've decided I would never again question the German people with regard to the rise of fascism and the Holocaust which occurred in their country. World War II was such a monumental event that it practically dominates the entire second half of the 20th century and even spilled into the 21st. Countless books, movies, videos, TV series have been made with World War II themes. In education, World War II dominates modern American history courses, and the World War II generation is often referred to as the greatest generation. I am too young to have experienced World War II directly. I did have contact with friends and family members who grew up during World War II or were veterans of World War II, Most of those who experienced the war directly, particularly veterans, carried it with them for the rest of their lives. Out of this, for my generation and those who are younger, two common refrains are often repeated. These are, one, if it weren't for us, all of Europe would be speaking German right now. And two, how could the German people allow the Holocaust to happen? For my generation and younger, the idea that if it weren't for us, all of Europe would be speaking German today, I find a bit ridiculous. None of us were there and had nothing to do with the so-called liberation of Europe, unless you count video games played on a PlayStation 3 console. But as far as how could the German people let this happen meme, I've been guilty of this as well. I don't remember when it hit, if it was a high school history class, a movie, or at university, but at some point in my life, I was overwhelmed by the Holocaust and left wondering how the German people could allow Hitler to slaughter millions of Jews, in addition to communists, homosexuals, Russians, gypsies, and anyone else deemed undesirable. I want to offer an apology to the German people. I will no longer question how they, quote, allowed, end quote, the Holocaust to take place. Hitler's rise to power didn't happen overnight. It took about 15 years of focused political activity for Hitler to rise to power. It was a slow process of chipping away at Germany's government until finally the enabling acts were passed and Hitler was able to seize total power. Hitler's rise to power also was coupled with the rise of the most awesome propaganda machine the world had ever seen, utilizing media, movies, and radio to promote the Nazi agenda. I will never again question how the German people could let it happen, because it's happening right here, right now, in the United States. It's been happening for the past 10 years. It's been happening ever since the Patriot Act was passed. It's been happening ever since we started rounding up innocent people and torturing them. It's been happening ever since warrantless wiretapping and data mining became the norm that no one dared to question. And it's been happening ever since Fox News started repeating to their audience, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. It's been happening ever since the Bush-Cheney administration embraced the doctrine of the Unitarian Executive. And it's been happening ever since the American people turned a blind eye to Guantanamo. And now, with the passing of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2012, the final nail in the coffin of the Constitution has been pounded into the wood grain. It's just a matter of time before the roundups begin. How did the German people allow the Holocaust to happen? How are the American people allowing it to happen? The United States is now officially a battleground. U.S. citizens can now be detained indefinitely with no hope for a trial. It's just a matter of time before the concentration camps are built. Who will be the target? Well, that depends on who's in power. Obama might be the benevolent dictator. Maybe Obama won't round up U.S. citizens. But what about the next right-wing president? What if another Cheney Bush-type leader comes to power? What will happen after the next terrorist attack on U.S. soil? Surely there will be another terrorist attack, whether it be a false flag operation or an actual attack from any number of countries and people the U.S. has offended. If we go to war with Iran, will Iranian Americans be rounded up? If a radical Islamic terrorist group commits another 9/11 type attack, will Muslim Americans be rounded up? If a right-wing president comes to power, will he or she round up any political dissidents they view as a threat to their power? All this is now possible in America, and the American people have allowed it to happen. No one cares. Nothing's being done. We are cows being led to the slaughter. It's just a matter of time. It took about 15 years for Hitler to come to power after a long political process. And we are now 10 years into the destruction of the United States Constitution. Where will we be 5 years from now? Who will be president? What evils await us? How long before the rest of the world starts asking, how could the American people allow this to happen? Joe in Temecula, California. I'll tell you what, Joe. National Defense Authorization Act was one of the final nails being pounded into the coffin wait till you find out what the what is being referred to as the Enemy Expatriation Act. Where do you find out what that's about? And we're going to talk about it a little bit next hour because I don't have a whole lot of information on it yet. But I do know it's sponsored, no surprise here, by Joe Lieberman in the Senate and Charles Dent in the House. Thanks for the email, Joe. Mike is in Westminster, South Carolina. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, it's good to talk to you again. I'm doing good. Yeah, that's absolutely right, what you're talking about and all this. And, hey, I got a call today on my home. I'm in South Carolina here.
Right.
And they called to there's an automatic polling
right.
system. They wanted to get the feel for the Republican candidates and stuff. And it was a one-question survey, automatic, just as, you know, if you were going to vote today for the Republican presidential, mm-hmm. candidate, which one would you like? You know, mm-hmm. one for Romney, two for, all these clowns.
Right.
And so I pushed the button for Ron Paul. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to kind of throw a little monkey wrench into the plan here because, South Carolina is expected to go hard for some sort of real religious nutcase conservative,
Yeah, and historically speaking, that's usually what happens, though, right? I mean,
yeah, that's right.
The primaries now are here in the South, and I've lived here for 40 years. You've been here for a long time, maybe all your life.
Yeah. Well, I've been all over a lot of different places, but yeah, I've lived here for a long time.
Right. So first of all, how political races are framed. They're framed around this, the whole God business. They're framed around the Christian God business and, mercy on anyone's soul who decides to dispute that.
Yeah, this is really quite a clown show that they've been running from Iowa to New Hampshire to South Carolina. I mean, it's ridiculous that, that anybody that keeps up with this is just wasting their time.
Mike, hold on a second. Let me put you on hold a second. We'll come back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. With Mike in Westminster, South Carolina. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, what I was saying is that all of this stuff with the Republican nominating fiasco and all of the other stuff, the Kabuki Theater and all of the stuff that they're doing is to mm-hmm. perpetuate the myth that actually democracy and freedom still exist in this country, Joe. And California was absolutely right; it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
They did it incrementally, a little bit at a time. Because that's the way that they do it. I mean, if everybody wanted to change everything overnight, there'd be an uproar, but they don't. They do it a little bit at a time. But here's the thing. We are so far from a possible political solution to our problems that it's not even fun. I mean, the door was totally slammed with the Citizens United decision. And all of these things that have gone on, like the NDAA and, mm-hmm. and this other thing you're talking about now, is just further indication that the doors and windows are all being closed, barred, and locked. There's two things that can save America right now. One of them is outright revolution, and the other one is a new constitutional convention, the latter of which I really don't expect to be happening.
No, I don't either, because I'm not sure how a constitutional convention is called, but I'm sure it takes action on the part of the Congress to put something like that into play. And again, I'm not sure how it's done, but the people who are doing this to the country are the ones that have the power to call such a convention. Now, I will tell you, there's going to be a People's Congress coming up this summer. We're not exactly sure when it's going to be, but it's going to be in Washington this summer. And let me give you the website here, Mike. If I mentioned it the other night, but I haven't mentioned it since. It's called, very simply, peoplescongress.org.
Yeah, I think I actually went to that site once before when you mentioned it.
Yeah, People's Congress.org, because something has got to give here. I mean,
you're right.
Something has got to happen. I'll be goddamned, you pardon my language, that if I'm going to sit back and do nothing while this continues. And I also know that I'm not strong enough to do anything on my own. You've got to have people. You've got to have people who are willing to get out there and make a change. So
That's the thing about what they're doing now, Mike. I mean, they've got this big heavy rock on top of us, and then they're pouring concrete over that just to make sure that we can't get up and do anything. I mean, people that want to go and protest run the risk now of losing their citizenship if this passes.
Well, if this new thing passes, it's only been introduced in the House and the Senate. God only knows where it's going to go. But if the NDAA passed, there's no telling the attitude of people in Congress to work on this Expatriation Act. And, you know, I don't trust Barack Obama anymore. It's been a long time since I have trusted him. But, you know, when the man looks me right in the face through the television and tells me he's not going to do something and then he does it, you know, where I grew up, that's called a liar.
That's exactly
I mean,
right.
I don't know how else to put it. That's called a liar.
There's no other way to put it, Mike.
And a lot of Obama supporters, a lot of Democrats will say, well, you know, and then they'll start giving me all these reasons why he may have had to do it, or there's a plan that after he gets reelected, or this or that, or this or that. And to that I say, bats not. When somebody looks you in the eye and says, I will do something or I won't do something, and then does a complete 180 on you, that person is a liar by definition. Not because I say he's a liar, but because he is.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be so bad if it was just about one thing, but it's everything.
I know.
You know, he doesn't miss anything. He hasn't done anything that's really good for the people since he's been there.
Well, I wouldn't quite go that far. I would put it this way. He's done a couple of good things, but they have been canceled by the stuff that he's done that is so horrible. And what gets me, these Republicans have a chance to challenge Obama on things like the NDAA, on things like the USA Patriot Act, on the fact that torture facilities are still operating, maybe not at Guantanamo, but around the country, around the world on our black sites. But they won't challenge him on that because they are in agreement with those things.
You're right.
So they call him a socialist, or they call him a Kenyan, or they call him a Muslim, which is like a two-year-old standing on a playground, you know, calling somebody else a brat. I mean, these Republicans are, I'm going to get too.
Well, you're right. And every time Obama has a chance to put somebody else on his team, he picks another person from Goldman Sachs.
Like he did the other day. I know.
We can't get out from under this rock. Anyway, in a political means, it's going to take real action. It's going to take millions, not a few thousand here and a few thousand there. We need millions.
That's
of
it. Absolutely. All right, Mike, thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in.
Take care, Mike.
All right, you too. Yeah, check out the website. I haven't mentioned it for, God, about a week. People'sCongress.org. People's, no apostrophe, just People'sCongress.org. And just understand something, okay? Like I've said a million times, I don't speak for anybody or anything that has to do with the Occupy movement. But I will guarantee you that for people in this country, the right-wingers, the Nazis, who think that all of a sudden the Occupy movement must have dissolved, you just keep thinking that, okay? Keep thinking that. So that when the fist rises up and smashes you in the face, you're going to have a moment of awareness that says, oh, well, I guess they weren't disappeared.
Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Mary is in South Carolina. She writes, Mike, the one factor that no one here ever mentions is the senior citizen voters. They're mostly Northerners from Ohio, Pennsylvania, and so on, who are all rabid Republicans, who don't know squat about any Republican candidate position and vote against their own best interests. The Democrats don't count these people, and they are a large segment, especially here in Myrtle Beach. These people here are all Fox News watchers and have such dense thinking. I will not try to broaden their minds. By the way, have you noticed MSNBC now has more Republican analysts than Democratic analysts? I exclusively watch current TV with hardly any Republican talking heads. Mary. Now, I'm not sure about MSNBC, Mary. I guess we could take a count or something, but thanks, Mary. I appreciate it. Fred is in Concord, New Hampshire. Hello, Fred.
Hi, Mike. Hi. I just want to say, first of all, I am really angry at what's going on. And I'm it's no surprise that Joe Lieberman is coming up with this bill. First of all, can you hear me okay? I'm getting an echo.
Yeah, no, I hear you fine. No echo here. You're coming through real clear.
Okay. I really feel that what's happened is that Israel has really gotten way too much influence over the United States.
Right.
And the fact that they are exerting so much pressure through AIPAC and controlling, especially, well, I should say all the politicians, the so-called pro-lifers who are really the most bloodthirsty group that are looking to get into a war with Iran, really is the height of hypocrisy because they're backed by Israel, who's really wanting to do a strike. And they're the ones that have over 400 illegal nukes, and they're calling the shots that Iran is looking at making nuclear weapons, which is all a lie. And they're predicating all of this story on the false statement that Ahmadinejad had said that Israel must be wiped off the face of the earth. That's not what he said.
Right. Let me interject just one thing. I agree with everything you're saying up to one thing, and that is I do believe, based on their strategic location, I do believe that the Iranians are working toward developing a nuclear weapon. And I think the reason they're doing it is because they feel they have no choice. I mean, look who they're surrounded by. They're surrounded by nuclear powers. There's Russia. There's Israel. There's Pakistan. There's India. They're being threatened constantly by the United States. And I think one lesson that countries who do not have nuclear weapons have learned is that the only way you can withstand pressure and threats from the United States or Russia or Israel or whoever is to develop your own nuclear weapon. So I agree with everything you're saying up to the point. I honestly do believe that the Iranians are working. It's a dual track, perhaps. They're working towards developing nuclear energy, but they're also working to develop a nuclear weapon. This is just, I mean, we're at that point in the history of the human race where if you're a country that doesn't have a nuclear weapon, you're subject to all sorts of blackmail, especially if you're a country like Iran. Iran, the leadership of Iran may be insane, but they're not crazy. You know what I'm saying by that? Look around and see what happens to countries like, say, Iraq that cannot protect itself when all of a sudden the predators take a look and say, we want their oil. They can take a look at countries like Afghanistan. They can't protect themselves. And all of a sudden, countries that are predators say, we want the natural resources. So I honestly do believe, I have no way of knowing, just call intuition, common sense, geopolitical realities, but the Iranians are working toward a nuclear weapon, probably.
However,
more than one.
If I can interject something with this.
Sure.
And even Leon Panetta has agreed that they're years away from developing a bomb. And as a matter of fact, I actually had met Scott Ritter, who was the head of UNSCOM after the Gulf War I.
Right.
Who had written a book that we should not. I forget the name of the title, but I had met him because he had come up to Concord to have a book signing, and I got to speak with him, and he basically was saying Iran is years away. They are now, because of Bush's doctrine of first strike, You know, it's to self-preserve themselves, just like North Korea did. We see now that North Korea has maybe one or two nuclear weapons, and there's nothing we can do, and they're kind of off the pressure list in that sense, because they were already built a bomb. But the real thing that was going on with Iran was they were cannibalizing their own oil, and they wanted to switch to nuclear energy. And that was the real thing they were doing, and Israel and the U.S. were saber-rattling just because they have the resources of oil and we want them. But I see this dangerous joint lies that are coming out from, it's almost in unison that we're working together, and you have these people like Lieberman, who I think should be boiled in oil. honestly, I mean, the guy is a traitor. And he's really looking out for the best interests of Israel and for the insurance company, since he's right in Connecticut, which is the insurance magnet. And he is doing the bidding of what both corporations and Israel wants. And what's going on in this country is far beyond voting somebody out, because they've tampered with our voting machines. We've got Citizens United now that corporations can basically dump boatloads of money. Our democracy's gone, especially with the signing of the NDAA. We're gone. This is now officially a dictatorship, and we need to wake up. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if it means we have a revolution. And, I mean, if it happens, I would be the first one out there, you know, whatever it takes. But the American people are too submissive and dumb and same thing that happened with Nazi Germany, as that other gentleman had said, is exactly the formula that they're using now. And Karl Rove, incidentally, studied Nazi Germany intently on using it as a template to what's going on right now.
Well, I certainly don't disagree with what you've said, Fred. I share the same fear and the same anger. And all I can say is, until we as a population, as a people, I'm sure that Pastor Niemöller might have said something along these lines before he released his famous statement about, by the time they came for me, there was no one left to speak for me. But until the American people decide that we literally want our system back, and from you know, Democrat, Republican is immaterial. We want our system back from the corporatists who now own it, and from the capitalists who are turning it into a fascist state. Until that happens, we're kind of at the mercy of whoever happens to be in power. So I'm hoping that it be done nonviolently. I'm hoping that it happens in my lifetime, and I hope it happens soon. Fred, I got to leave it there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate everything you had to say. Take care. Paul is in Canton, Georgia. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Getting along.
Yeah, me too. Just a quick note for you. I have to agree with you totally that it's impossible to deal with the right-wingers, because there was a story on NPR yesterday about how, I think it was like 60-65% of the teabaggers believed that Mitt Romney's first name was Mittens, because I'm sure one of the idiots, like Limbaugh or Hannity, told him that was his name.
Right, right.
So if they don't even know one of their own what's going on, how would anybody, Obama or further to left, be able to deal with them?
Oh, I know. It's awful. I know.
I mean, it's one of their own. They can't even get the name right, you know?
Right.
It's just hilarious that, you know, that this many people are that ignorant about everything.
That's true.
And they get to vote.
Yeah, well, the thing that goes hand in hand, I think, with ignorance is apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And the only difference between ignorance and apathy is, as a matter of fact, I'm looking at an email right now from Tim from L.A. that says that the difference between ignorance and apathy is that apathy is far more dangerous.
Yeah.
And I like the kind of hugely ironic riddle. It goes like this. What's the difference between ignorance and apathy? Answer, I don't know, and I don't care. Oh, my God. All right, Paul, thanks for checking in, pal.
Have a good night.
Oh, listen, hey, watch out for the snow. It's going to snow up in Canton. You heard about that, I guess.
No.
Yeah, okay. There's snow coming tomorrow, man.
Okay, well, I'm from Buffalo, so it really doesn't snow.
No, but when they talk about snow down here, they're talking about, well, you know what they're talking about. They're talking about a dusting. But anyway,
exactly.
Just thought I'd let you know.
Yeah.
So bring in the cows and the chickens, right?
Exactly.
All right, Paul, take care. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Yeah, the weather geeks and Metro Atlanta TV stations. And Paul lives about, I don't know, Canton is about 30 miles, 35, 40 miles north of Atlanta. And the weather geeks on the channels here, they have these huge weather sets now, especially the ABC affiliate here at WSB. I used to work for WSB, the radio side. Huge weather sets, all kinds of sophisticated equipment. I think the WSB weather apparatus here is one of the most extensive of any television station in America. But they just go berserk when there's a possibility that there might be a quarter inch of snow or even a dusting. They send out camera crews, usually up to Canton, Georgia, as a matter of fact. They'll send out a camera crew and the anchor will be standing there, and little tiny, almost invisible flakes are coming down, so you can't really see it. So they'll point the camera at the ground so you can see actual snowflakes. It's really sad. Second time, I've been horribly embarrassed tonight. The first time was sharing with you a story about George Bush that was a year old and not knowing how the Constitution is rewritten. I'm really embarrassed. Prairie 2 has to fill me in here. The states can call a constitutional convention by two-thirds of them petitioning Congress. Congress has to respond, by the way. A new constitution must then be approved by three-fourths of the states, like any amendment. This, of course, Prairie 2 writes, would be a chance for the right to put in place the Nuremberg laws that they didn't get a chance to incorporate into the Patriot Act. Yeah, there is a danger. There's always a danger when you open up something like a constitutional convention. This never stops, does it? Dave is in Cordova, Alaska. Are you far from Nome, Dave? I know you told me once before, but are you?
Right now I am. We do have one icebreaker heading there trying to get fuel in, but we are, I suppose, most recently famous for having had 20 feet of snow dumped on us in the past 2.5 weeks, which is, blah, blah. It's what happens.
Well, it looks pretty scary. I was watching on network news tonight and in the past couple of days, and really, especially up around Nome, it looks scary as hell.
That's pretty normal up there, though. I mean, their fuel shortage might be a factor in it, but, we're getting a blast of significant winter, and, that's all pretty normal.
Oh, okay. All right.
If the water was open, it would be an anomaly, which it was open here a year ago and shorted out a bunch of power lines on St. Lawrence Island, and because the ice hadn't frozen as usual, it caused a lot of grief for a lot of people, but... we're just having ourselves a good old time here.
Okay.
It's currently raining pretty hard on it, so it's got the National Guard here and they're shoveling off roofs. And it's a real winter. But I guess what I wanted to point at information and our conscience and consciousness of what's going on around us and our ineffectuality at really dealing with it. So, I mean, it feels that way. I just like to thank you in particular for giving us communion, those of us who listen and find strength. We need to communicate, and you're doing just a grand job in holding people together who are aware of what's going on in our world. And as I said, specifically, we can't really address all these things at once, but at least the campfire you provide is pretty significant, Mike. You should be aware of that.
That's kind of you to say. I do appreciate it. Dave, stay warm, okay?
I will, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right, sir. Stay in touch. Dave in Alaska. Ruben is driving in Illinois listening on XM. Hey, Ruben, we got about 2 minutes here, pal.
Yes, Mike.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Good.
Okay, look here. I was listening to you rant about Barack Obama, you know, my question is, has there ever been a president since you've been living or able to vote that done everything that you liked and everything that you wanted?
No.
That's what I thought the answer would be.
But you know what? But you know what, Ruben? In my lifetime, there's never been a president, not even a Republican, who has put on the books a law like Barack Obama signed the other day that says the first, fifth, fourth, eighth, and tenth amendment no longer apply.
Okay, well, I don't know nothing about that one.
Well, Ruben, let me tell you something, buddy. Before you call me up to talk, what I'd suggest you do is bring yourself up to speed on the President of the United States and some of the bills he signed into law. You have to understand this stuff. I mean, we're not talking beanbag here. I don't sit here and criticize Barack Obama just for the sheer hell of it. I wish he were what he said he was going to be. I wish he would do what he said he was going to do. I wish he would not do what he said he would not do. Barack Obama, Ruben, whether you like him or dislike him as a person, I happen to like the way he talks. He's a great talker. But he's a liar. He is a liar, Ruben, in the same way that your mother and your grandmother told you about lying. When you look at somebody in the eye and you say, I will not do that, and then you go do it, your grandma and your mama didn't give a damn what the reason was. She still said to you, Ruben, you lied to me. Okay? Let's just get that straight, pal. Because, I don't want people just, thinking, oh, well, Malloy just busted up on Obama. I voted for him. I had great hopes. I really thought that something was about to happen in this country to reverse 8 years of incipient fascism. And I was right. Something did happen. The fascism gets to continue. Now, if you don't agree with that, that's fine. I mean, that's all right. But get your story straight. Realize what your president's done. If you call this program and I say, well, Barack Obama is the first person to sign into law a bill that means I can be detained for no reason, don't tell me you're not up to speed on it or you don't know what I'm talking about. Because if you do, then I'll have to move on. Thanks, Ruben. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. seven past the hour. A couple of things here that I want to share with you. Kind of a potpourri. I got a piece of hate mail. I don't get a whole lot of hate mail anymore. I don't know why that is, but this one is very explicit in the subject line here. It says, I hate you. It says, Mike, I hate you with the heat of those twin suns on whatever planet Luke Skywalker lived on with his soon-to-be-dead uncle and aunt foster parents. Why do I hate you? Because AM 1090 in Seattle time delays your broadcast so I can listen to it when I go to bed. How nice of them. Problem is, when I tune on your show while I'm in bed, I get so worked up with anger, I'm soon out of bed and back on the computer. Case in point, just last night you covered the 14 defining characteristics of fascism. So there I am in bed, checking off point after point with you, and it's like you're the bellows fanning my anger furnace. It's like the scene in Groundhog Day where Andy McDowell is listing the characteristics for what she wants in a mate, and Bill Murray is saying, me, me, me. You're reading down the list, and after each item, I'm saying, check, check, check. How do you expect someone to fall asleep after rubbing it in their face that their democratic republic is a not-so-stealthy fascist state? Kind of unnerving, you know? So I got out of bed and onto Facebook and posted the link to Dr. Britt's list on my wall and the different groups I hang out in. And look, instead of in bed, I'm emailing you. I hate you, Mike. Your hateful friend, Rick. Oh, God, do I know the feeling, Rick. Oh, do I know the feeling. How many times I'm ready to call it a night. It's midnight here in the East. Finish the program. There's some, just one more thing I wanted to read because somebody sent me a link to something. I start reading it and... Here's one of those stories. This is from Sherelle. Remember the person, the woman who sponsored an hour last week in honor of Sanchez's birthday? That Sherelle. See, I remember names. I do. I just don't. I don't often remember names. Anyway, this is from Huffington Post. A year after the Tucson shootings that left 6 dead and 13 injured, one of the survivors has strong feelings about the incident and the congresswoman and her husband, astronaut Mark Kelly. That feeling is best described as nausea. So the story goes on here. This guy, George Morris, who's 77, and he tells the Arizona Republic, quote, every time I see them on television, it makes me want to vomit. He is a self-described, his words, ultra-conservative. He initially went to that town hall meeting that Congresswoman Griffins was at outside the grocery store in Tucson to complain to her because he says she kept voting for liberal causes. He went there to complain. And right before he had a chance to speak to her, a gunman, Jared Lee Loeffner, began shooting. And this guy, the ultra-conservative, his wife, Dorothy, was one of those killed in the rampage. And Morris himself was hit in the legs and the back. Giffords, of course, was shot in the head. And according to Huffington Post, he was angry at Congresswoman Giffords' job performance before the shooting. But now Morris is more convinced that she should be removed from office immediately, according to MSNBC.com. He said, quote, I think she ought to be thrown out of Congress post-haste. I do not think she is worthy of serving, end quote. Now, this guy's a retired Marine, airline pilot, was married 54 years before his wife was gunned down by Loeffner. And apparently he blames the congresswoman for this madman who was inspired probably by Glenn Beck. And Morris and his wife met while they were both juniors in high school. He told the Arizona Republic that, quote, no man has ever loved a woman more than I loved my wife. He says, quote, if my wife had a fault, if she was too concerned about how other people would feel, said Mr. Morris. In other words, he was concerned because his wife was compassionate. He says he felt so strongly about his own political beliefs that he refused an invitation to have President Obama visit him in his hospital room in the days following the shootings. Wow. Well, I'm sure what is happening to Mr. Morris here is that he is very, very, very upset about his wife's murder. And rather than blame the person who shot his wife to death, and perhaps blame those who inspired the person to shoot his wife to death, and those would be the right-wing talk show hosts who constantly, without let-up, lean on the weak-minded in this country to pick up a gun and go kill people, go kill liberals, go kill gay people, go kill progressives, go kill Democrats. And you know who does that. You know who does it 24/7. You know their names. They have addresses, too. But their names are people like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the rest of these scum who so demonize people who love this country, progressives, liberals, Democrats. They just constantly, for the past 20 years, just fill the airwaves with this terrible hate about the terrible, terrible Democrats, the terrible, terrible liberals. And you get someone like Jared Lee Loeffner, who is weak-minded. Those are the types of people that listen to people like Beck, weak-minded ones. The same types of people used to listen, will listen to any tyrant, any dictator, any would-be promoter of assassinations. That's who you listen to, Beck, scum like that. So this poor man whose wife of 54 years was gunned down now can only find it in himself to blame a woman who also was a victim. How sad. How terribly, terribly sad.
I think we shouldn't forget that it was, I believe it was Sarah Palin's website that put a target over Gabriella Giffords.
That's right.
District and a gun site target.
Yeah.
And
this poor man, just for some reason, that doesn't filter into his mind. He blames the woman that he went to see. He blames the congresswoman that he took his wife to go see. I mean, this is the kind of sickness. I feel sorry for this man. I really do. What a terrible way to lose your significant other of 54 years, gunned down in the street by a madman who probably shared the basic political views as this poor husband. And unlike the poor husband, Loeffner was inspired to pick up a weapon and go start killing people by people like Glenn Beck. What a shame. Terrible, terrible shame. I wonder if Glenn Beck is aware of how one person is suffering. Many people are suffering, but this guy in particular, who shares Beck's ideas, it's obvious he shares Beck's ideas. I wonder if Beck is aware of how this man is suffering because Beck inspired somebody to pick up a gun and go kill his wife and five other people. Why is Glenn Beck on the radio?
These bombs, we don't know what's gone wrong.
Right Wing Radio, God Kills a Kitten.
Past the hour. I guess you realize today is the 10th anniversary of the opening of our own little, I guess, headquarters of the American Gulag. I'm talking about Guantanamo. Today is the 10th anniversary, 10 years, that this place on the in Cuba has been home to alleged terrorists scooped up by the U.S. following our invasion of Afghanistan. I think that's when it first began. 10 years, and you know, you've heard this a million times. So many of the people that were scooped up were taken to this torture facility simply because somebody in Afghanistan went to one of our military people and said, you know that group over there, a bunch of terrorists? Oh, they are? Yes. I mean, the horror stories that eventually, I guess, maybe will be told are probably going to form a chapter in U.S. history right up there with the way we destroyed indigenous people in this country, or the way we lynched slaves, or not slaves, just black folk. I mean, this is really a bad chapter. It's difficult. I know it is. It's difficult for me. It has to be difficult for you if you're sane to accept some of the horrors that various U.S. governments have perpetrated in our name, my name, your name, perpetrated against other people. It is not part of the mythology of exceptional America. But we ran a torture facility in Cuba and various places around the planet. And I just wonder if someday we'll know, or our descendants will know, exactly how extensive that torture network was. When you consider places like Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan, where people literally, with U.S. complicity, put people inside huge packing containers. You've seen those packing containers when you're sitting at a railroad track waiting as a freight train goes by, those great big packing containers that say China on them, or Maersk, or some of the other big shipping companies, you know, the shipping containers. People were placed in those in 120-degree Fahrenheit temperature and left to literally cook. Can you imagine the smell? I mean, things like that we have been involved in. The beating deaths that the New York Times finally revealed. Beating deaths of Afghan prisoners that were beaten to death by CIA, U.S. military, who knows? But Americans. And then, of course, Abu Ghraib in Iraq. The torture there, the humiliation. I mean, it really is going to turn out to be, it may not be Solzhenitsyn level, like the Gulag Archipelago, but it's going to be on a level, if the truth ever comes out, that is going to cause the Americans who read about it shame of the deepest kind, if Americans are so capable of feeling shame. I am. How about you? So 10 years. Obama's pledge to shut down Guantanamo within a year of taking office? Yeah, well, that passed 2 years ago. So much for that. I don't know. It's hard to think about this stuff. I think about the hate mail that I started the program with, or started this hour with, the guy who said, you know, he listened to the program, and I can understand. I hate it, too. It's been a year since any of the remaining, there's about 200 detainees still there. It's been a year since any of them have been released because of congressional refusal to allow them to be brought to the United States to be put on trial. and the willingness of the Obama administration to sanction indefinite detention. You know, the NDAA that was just signed by law by President Obama, indefinite detention is there. And I understand your confusion. Oh, but Mike, they're not allowed to hold U.S. citizens that way. Oh, yes, they are. If you know, that's what the signing statement was all about. Obama signs it into law and then issues the signing statement that says, oh, well, but, you know, I disagree with this. I'm still going to sign it into law. Which has the weight of U.S. law, the signing statement or the actual bill that was signed into law? Which one, huh? You know which one. Jay Carney, White House spokesman, had something to say about this Monday. I'll tell you about it as soon as we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
Yeah, indeed. 25 before the hour. So Jay Carney, a spokesperson for Barack Obama and the Obama administration, is trying to put the proper spin on the fact that Guantanamo and our torture facility and detention facility is 10 years old and still going strong, even though Obama promised, another one of Barack Obama's promises, broken, that he would, within a year of being elected president, close our gulag, the starting point of our gulag, close it down. That was 2 years ago, the year passed. Anyway, Jay Carney said Monday, quote, "The commitment the president has to closing Guantanamo is as firm today as it was during the campaign." Ooh, well, that's good to know. I'm glad to know that our president's commitment... How do you stay committed to something that you promised would happen 2 years ago? That seems to be kind of a flip-flop through time, sort of like that screenplay or that novel that Bob Alexander was going to write but decided not to for the reasons that he stated, if you heard it last night. But maybe Jay Carney has figured out a way for Barack Obama to flip back and forth through time also. The president is still committed to his promise. But Jay, the promise was 2 years... Oh, never mind. Jesus, God. Carney went on to say, closing Gitmo, quote, is the right thing to do for our national security interests. That has been an opinion shared not just by this president or members of this administration, but senior members of the military as well as this president's predecessor, that would be George W. Bush, and the man he ran against for this office in the general election, that would be John McCain. End quote. So if everybody's committed, what's the problem here? Huh? What's the problem? Tom Parker of Amnesty International puts it this way. There's plenty of blame to go around. Congress has worked diligently to block the president's attempts to close Guantanamo. But the president has also failed to make the case to the American people that it must be closed. End quote. See, this part I don't understand. I know somebody's going to send me an email here, but if George W. Bush opened it, why can't Barack Obama close it? I don't know. Anyway, there are protests today, or there were protests today, in Washington, Berlin, Madrid, and London. Some of the detainees were expected to reject their meals. I haven't seen anything on the news. Have you? Now, human rights activists, and I'll put myself in with this group. Human rights activists Time Magazine says, online, are not only upset with Obama for failing to keep his pledge to shut the prison down over congressional objections, but because our president recently signed a defense bill authorizing indefinite military detention without trial. Authorizing it. But that's what's going on in Guantanamo. 36 of the 171 still being held on the U.S. Navy base, according to Time.com, await trial for war crimes. 36. The remaining 135 are being held because they are allegedly dangerous. They can't be sent home because their homeland is falling apart. So that would be Somalia, Ethiopia, Afghanistan, Iraq. They can't be sent home because of congressional restrictions. You see, Congress has barred delivering any of these detainees to the U.S. for trial and blocked the transfer back to their homelands. So there they sit. So the question remains, is the Obama administration any closer to closing Guantanamo today than it was the day Obama became president? Jay Carney said Monday when he was asked that, quote, "This is the process. This is a process that faces obstacles that we're all aware of, and we will continue to work through it," end quote. That, of course, is White House speak for "Don't count on it. Hell no, it's not going to happen. But, you know, we really appreciate your question." Now, something, there's a new wrinkle here that is really got me unnerved. It kind of ties into the NDAA, the refusal to close Guantanamo. I didn't know about this until late last night. There is a new bill in Congress, working its way through Congress, that would allow the U.S. government to strip your citizenship away from you without any sort of conviction. And according to what I have here, first Congress considered the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, which gave the president the authority to use the military to arrest and indefinitely detain Americans without trial or charge. And now a new bill has emerged that was signed into law. Oh, yeah, there was a signing statement. There's a new bill now that poses yet another threat to you and to me. Congress is considering two bills. In the House, it's H.R. 3166, H.R. 3166. And in the Senate, it's S. 1698. Look them up. H.R. 3166 and S. 1698. S. 1698. Those are the two bills. They are known as the Enemy Expatriation Act. They are being sponsored by Joe Lieberman and Charles Dent, a Republican from Pennsylvania. Charles Dent and Joe Lieberman. This bill would give the U.S. government the power to strip Americans of their citizenship without being convicted of being hostile against the United States. In other words, if this bill becomes law, you can be stripped of your nationality, your American citizenship, for, quote, "engaging in or purposefully and materially supporting hostilities against the United States," end quote. Now, legally, the term hostilities means any conflict subject to the laws of war, but considering the fact that the war on terror is just a tad ambiguous and encompassing, any action could be labeled as supporting terrorism. And I don't need to point out to you that since the Occupy movement began, right-wingers in this country like Joe Lieberman and Charles Dent and every single Republican in Congress and every neo-fascist and every conservative They all have been trying to paint the protesters, the Occupy movement protesters, as terrorists. So once again, you know, I don't know what to say about this. I really don't. But it appears you just have to be accused of supporting something that could be defined as hostilities against the U.S. And that can be defined any way the government sees fit to define it. Now, am I suggesting that Barack Obama is going to put any of this into play? No. Bill Clinton wasn't in office long enough, really, to put anything about NAFTA into play. But look what happened. But once this becomes law, unless it is rescinded by the Congress that put it into effect or overturned as unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court, it's going to remain in law, a part of American law. The NDAA is there for keeps. The USA Patriot Act II is there for keeps. And now this, the Enemy Expatriation Act. The government of the United States can strip your citizenship and apply the indefinite detention section of the NDAA without benefit of a trial if this is signed into law. Do you understand this? Like I say, I don't know how to respond to it, but if you want to do some research on your own, in the House it's H.R. 3166, in the Senate it's S. 1698. It's titled the Enemy Expatriation Act. It's sponsored by Joe Lieberman of Connecticut and Charles Dent, Republican of Pennsylvania. Okay? So do your own research. H.R. 3166 and S. 1698. My God. We'll be right back. Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. We want to thank you for supporting our independent broadcasting efforts these last 3 years. So we have a delicious gift from our own little brownie, Molly Malloy, to show our appreciation.
Hi, Truth Seekers. It's Molly Malloy. I'm selling Girl Scout cookies so my troop can go on our first camping trip. But we want to give some to you for free to thank you for helping with my mom and dad's show. The next 100 True Seekers who sponsor an hour of the program will get a free box of Girl Scout cookies from one of the three all-time favorites, Samoas, Thin Mints, or Tagalongs. Something sweet from us for being so sweet to us.
Just visit MikeMalloy.com, True Seekers, and click on the sponsorship tab to sponsor an hour of the program. We'll mail you your free box of cookies after February 15th. Girl Scout cookies, of course, are only available once a year. And we only have 100 boxes to give away to the first 100 new sponsors. When the cookies are gone, they're gone! This is our way of saying thanks for all you do to support this program and independent broadcasting.
Thanks for keeping it lit!
10 before the hour. So why do you suppose, this is one of those questions, I'll toss it out there and you can you can knock it out of the park. Why would a bill be considered? Do you understand what's going on here? You know, for those of you who can put up with it, you listen to me every night or some nights, just screaming and belching and vomiting up all this panic and anger and rage about what's going on. And I don't know how it sounds on the air because I just, you know, I don't listen to talk radio. I really don't. And I damn sure don't listen to myself. I you know, once the show is done, it's done. I can get up the next morning and say to Kathy, hey, what did we talk about last night? And she'll look at me and go, are you kidding? You almost had a stroke. And I'm, oh, yeah, well, it must have been something important. You know, when the 3 hours of this program is over, it's over. So I just, I wonder how you think about something you've heard on this program, because this is probably the only place you're going to hear about it. I mean, really, it is. That's one of the reasons that this program is continually pushed into a dead time zone. As what happened on Green 960, as what in San Francisco, what happened in on the station in Madison, Wisconsin. We are delay broadcast in so many markets. And I guess the hope is that on the one hand, the station can say, well, we play his program, so we're not biased against what he has to say, but we're going to put it in a time slot where you'll never hear it. I don't know. Have you heard anything about this yet? The Enemy Expatriation Act sounds like something out of World War II, doesn't it? Sounds like something that we might have used against Japanese Americans or Italian Americans or German Americans, right? It sounds really goddamn evil, doesn't it? The Enemy Expatriation Act. Well, who could be against something designed to get rid of our enemies? The problem here, of course, is the definition of enemy is becoming broader and broader and broader. An enemy of the state. What does this sound like? For Christ's sake, what does this sound like? An enemy of the state. You can go all the way back to Kafka, or you can go forward to Orwell, or you can listen to contemporary social scientists who are telling you, look, fascism is coming. It's here. And what do? Nothing. We don't do anything. We watch this goddamn clown show going on with the Republicans. Oh, Mitt Romney got 41%. Oh, Newt Gingrich got 10%. Oh, Ron Paul got 23%. Oh, blah, blah, blah. All this vomiting that you see on television about, oh, looky here, looky here. Everybody, looky here. Don't look there. Looky here. Look at the contest we've set up to divert your attention. Ooh, let's pick sides. Is it going to be Romney? Whatever happened to Michelle Bachmann? Remember the colored guy? The pizza man? Whatever happened? In the meanwhile, some scum-sucking Nazi like Joe Lieberman and another scum-sucking Nazi like Charles Dent quietly introduced into the House and the Senate something called the Enemy Expatriation Act, which means if you disagree with the policies of your government, because after all, the United States of America is now officially a war zone. If you disagree, if you dissent, if you protest against, is that what this is about? If you occupy a public space in protest of the murderous economic / political system being applied in this country, what happens now? Can you be stripped of your citizenship? I guess that would depend on how your activities would be defined. And you're not going to define them. You are not going to say, I'm only exercising my First Amendment rights, free assembly, free speech, the right to petition my government for redress. No, 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 no. You're not going to define that any longer. Because this new bill, this new law, if it becomes law, defines any action that could be considered hostile to the United States government as being an act that could be punished under the Enemy Expatriation Act. Hostile. What is hostile? Huh? If a cab driver gives you the finger because you cut him off in traffic, that's hostile, right? What do you call it when you have 300 people assemble in an Occupy movement in downtown Oakland or Atlanta or Baltimore or Detroit to voice their opposition against domestic and foreign U.S. government policy? What do you call that if you are a fascist form of government? Do you call that hostile? Think back to Germany in the 20s and 30s. There's your model. Think to Soviet Russia in the 50s and 60s. There's your model. H.R. 3166 and S1698. Look them up. I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy. Take care. Keep it lit.
What happened, man?